talking about undermining democracy reminds me of Ian Dunt and the dramatic UK election campaign rolling on with Farage pulling his Brexit Party candidates out of contest with the Conservatives. But the Brexit Party's tactical decision is not the only development, with both Labour and the Tory Party suffering cyber attacks. To tell us more, Ian Dunt joins us from London. Welcome back.
Hello, thank you very much.
Tell us about these cyber attacks.
Well, we don't know much, to be honest. There's this sort of lexicon that people break into. It's like, oh, it's a sophisticated cyber attack. It's not actually really clear just exactly whether it was a real cyber attack, whether it really was that sophisticated. It seems to be a denial of service attack. And basically, they just overload you to the point that you're no longer able to function. And it seems to have come possibly from Brazil, possibly from Russia. However, we don't really know that. We only know what they've said so far. And even though it looks like something came from Brazil, it's perfectly possible that it came from within the UK.
I must raise the possibility that perhaps Labour was attacking the Conservatives and vice versa.
Yeah, well, to be honest, the way things are, it's perfectly possible that the Conservatives were attacking the Conservatives and Labour people were attacking Labour itself. There's more than enough hatred within those parties to make it possible. The truth is, at the moment, we just don't know until we get some more information. People obviously have that sort of vigilance about, is this like, you know, with Clinton during the American elections? Is this like with Macron during the French elections? We just don't have the information yet.
So what might it also be a distraction, a deliberate sort of attempt to address or to camouflage something more significant that's occurring?
It's possible. There's an awful lot of this around at the moment. I don't know whether you guys have this phrase, the sort of dead cat strategy, which comes from your countryman, Linton Crosby, probably, I'm afraid to say, one of the most pernicious elements in British politics.
I wish you hadn't mentioned that name, but continue.
I can't imagine you're a huge fan, but it's all right, because now we have Dominic Cummings, you know, the Tory party, who's probably 2 to 3 times as bad as Crosby ever would. In fact, it almost makes me nostalgic for him. And he had this strategy where he sort of said, look, if you're in trouble over here, you put a dead cat on the table. In other words, you say something outrageous or do something outrageous and all the attention will be on the dead cat and it won't be talking about the stuff that was bedeviling you. So, you know what? I'm sure that this was used sometimes. However, we've developed, it's the sort of liberal lefty version of low-level conspiracy theory, where almost everything that happens now in any part of politics, someone says, oh, it's a dead cat strategy, don't be distracted. And you sort of think, well, yeah, I mean, especially, you know, when Boris Johnson was having about 5 scandals a day, you think, well, they can't all be dead cats unless he's gone around strangling every single one in London. You know, sometimes you just have to pay attention to the story.
Nigel Farage's Brexit Party's decision not to field candidates against the Conservative Party is starting to blow back on him, I understand.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this is like the beautiful logic of Brexit victim hunting. You know, for 3 years we've had the Brexiteers. Anytime anyone does anything they don't like, they're like, you traitor, you've betrayed Britain, you've betrayed the Brexit cause. Finally, it comes full circle this morning, where some local Brexit Party organisations are putting up pictures of Nigel Farage, of all people, with the words traitor underneath. You think, well, we all knew we would get here eventually, that finally, you know, it would actually come around and eat the tail. And now we are finally at that moment.
Well, some candidates are very bitter about it, aren't they? They're saying that Farage has betrayed our incredible volunteers, the thousands of constituents who will have no one to vote for, etc., etc.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not, you know, necessarily wrong to feel that way. I mean, lots of them have spent lots of money, they've done lots of work in order suddenly to be stood down. Now, you look at it on the basics of it. You know, last week, or just really a few days ago, Nigel Farage was out there on stage going, Boris Johnson's deal was an absolute disaster. It can't be allowed to stand. I'm putting forward candidates in 600 seats. Now he has gone into something that he calls rather marvellously a unilateral alliance. You know? I mean, thank God he's not the one trying to negotiate Brexit. It'd be even worse than Boris Johnson and Theresa May have been. And on that basis, on the basis of basically Boris Johnson doing absolutely nothing, he has now decided to stand down from Tory-held seats, but not Labour-held seats. Now, this puts him in quite a weird position because it's sort of an admission that he is unable to sort of fight on a national scale. And it removes strategically from him something quite crucial, which was he always had to claim that there was a greater Brexit than the one the government was pursuing, or else there was simply no point to him. You know, since 2016, the reality is the Conservative Party has become UKIP, his former party. It has now become the Brexit Party, his current party. He has completely owned the frame and the manner in which politics is discussed in this country and the priorities. So on that basis, he had to find some space for himself. And the way he did that was to keep on saying, well, if only it was up to me, I'd have a better deal. Whatever it is the government's doing is in some way a betrayal. Now, he has essentially shifted. And he said, well, actually, I can live with Boris Johnson's deal. And what that does very quickly is to ask the question, well, what exactly then is the point of Nigel Farage? And that pressure is suddenly seeing him being absolutely battered this week. The current pressure is him for now to stand down in Tory target seats against Labour. Now, for Remainers like myself, that would be very troubling indeed, because you would suddenly think, well, actually, that really does look like we'd get a Tory majority. But for the moment, he's standing firm, but that guy is getting squeezed right now. He's getting squeezed like he never has done before.
Any chance he might change his mind again?
Yeah, there is a chance. He's coming under serious pressure. I mean, Aaron Banks, his funder and his long-term friend, was today saying you've got 48 hours to save Brexit by stepping down from these Tory target seats. It doesn't look like that's what's going to happen. He said, look, I've got these 300 sort of candidate papers. They're all signed and ready to go. There's other people, you know, Richard Tice is sort of basically another funder of the Brexit Party and one of the candidates. Sounds very much like he's like, no, we've done what we've done and we're going to run in these others. Because they know if they give up now, they are about to ask serious existential questions about what the point of them is as a party. However, of course, if they don't, they provide some very, very difficult strategic problems for delivering Brexit at all, because they are essentially dividing the pro-Brexit vote, which allows more Labour MPs, which means it's more likely we'd get a second referendum.
Is there any chance that some of these very angry potential candidates might still run? In Australia, they could, as independents.
Yeah, and they can, of course, as independents. The trouble is you take away the branding. You take away, of course, the machine that was behind them. I mean, you know, for a while, a few months ago, during the European elections, the Brexit Party had a really quite impressive media machine behind it. So they would have a much harder time. But it's the same kind of question that you're seeing independent Tories. So people like David Gawk, who just a few months ago was a minister in the government, he was the Justice Minister, has now left the Conservative Party and is running as an independent, he announced this morning, in order to try and get a second referendum and to stop Boris Johnson becoming Prime Minister. So there are a lot of people making this choice. Dominic Grieve, another moderate Conservative, is doing exactly the same thing. I think those guys, those Brexit candidates, would really struggle. They don't have anything like the sort of impact, the weight and the fame of the other people we've discussed.
How important at this point is the ongoing charges of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party?
It's really important. And I mean, it is really creating some very tortured conversations among Remainers, among, you know, those who oppose Boris Johnson. Because the reality is they're faced with an impossible decision, which is, on the one hand, without Labour, there is no way of stopping Boris Johnson becoming Prime Minister. There's no way of stopping Brexit. But also, you know, if Labour are considered a fundamentally immoral party, there is no working opposition in this country. That is the entirety of the basis of our political system, is someone needs to be there to oppose the government.
But there must be lots of people still believing in the light on the hill, as we'd say in Australian Labour.
Yeah, and there are. And there are people who, especially are within Labour, who have fought the good fight on this issue, who have fought anti-Semitism, who have tried to clear up the Labour Party. However, it is impossible to deny the fact that the Labour Party has been incredibly lazy about addressing allegations of anti-Semitism and has mostly treated them like some kind of conspiracy dreamed up by the right-wing press. And I think the exact number is 86% of British Jews polled think that a Labour vote is something that would make them feel uncomfortable, that would make them feel scared. Now, you just have to take that on board. It is very hard to vote for a party where that is the circumstance that flows from it. So a lot of people on the liberal left side are having real dark nights of the soul about how to proceed.
As we've learned to mistrust political polls in this country, well, many countries have learned to mistrust them, but what are they saying at the moment?
They vary, so you should mistrust them here. I mean, yesterday there were two polls came out. One of them gave Boris Johnson a 14-point lead. The other one gave him a 6-point lead. Massive differences between what that would entail. Almost all of them give Boris Johnson a lead. However, one shouldn't conclude too much from that. The thing is the spatial layout of the vote. And he has three fronts that he needs to battle. He, just to keep himself where he is, he needs to try to avoid losing seats in Scotland to the Scottish Nationalists. He needs to try and avoid losing seats in liberal England, liberal southern England, to the Liberal Democrats. And then he needs to go and take seats off Labour in the north of England, mostly socialist sort of worker voters. Now, that is a pretty big ask. And even if he has quite a big poll lead, trying to simultaneously win those three battles will be quite difficult for him. So although the probability right now is that Boris Johnson gets a small majority, but there is absolutely no one in this race, absolutely no one at all, who's taking anything for granted. It's very volatile. It could still go anyway.
Thank you very much, Ian Dunt, who, of course, is a commentator on matters from the UK. And this is LNL on RN.